So welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. The lodge here in Philadelphia, as well as all the independent lodges around the world, are guided by a policy, a statement of principles, which bind them all together. And it is a very important document for you to be familiar with. You can pick one up at the usher's table before and after meetings. But you'll see that there's basically a few principles to grasp. And one of the main ideas is that this is an independent association of students. It is left up to the individual to decide how and when and even why they will devote themselves to the great cause of the Theosophical movement, which is the benefit and true service of humanity. And the second idea to keep in mind is the impersonality of the association. The purpose here is to place before the public the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy so that individuals can gain a truer realization of the self and a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. That's the most important idea. So personalities are kept in the background. We all have personalities and we need them to communicate and relate to the others, but we leave aside personal dissensions and differences of individual opinion, leave that at the door, so to speak, and form a basis of unity, a nucleus of universal brotherhood in the study and application of these ideas. And the third important idea is the basis of unity. This is a strong association. It's been in existence since 1909, and with lodges all around the world, but there are no constitution, bylaws, officers, dues. The activities here are kept up through independent and voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. And all are welcome to participate. And as a matter of fact, if you are interested in helping out in a more particular way and you don't know how you can begin to help, you can always ask the person at the book table for some suggestions. So what is it that holds us together is a similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. That is the basis of our unity. So the Lodge regards as Theosophists all those who are engaged in the true service of humanity and desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. So these are the basic principles that are written out so eloquently in the Declaration. So in keeping with the activities, the purposes of the Lodge, we have several activities here in Philadelphia. On Sunday mornings from 11 to 12, we have a presentation of the teachings of Theosophy in a more formalized setting, either in a panel or, as we will have this morning, a forum, which is a longer talk followed by ample time for questions and answers. We'll get into the subject for today in a few minutes, but to mention that next week we're going to be continuing under the umbrella theme for March of the Mysteries of Mind, considering the light and heat of compassion and passion. And you'll notice that even from the very beginning, these mysteries of the mind have been approached from the point of the duality of the mind, that we, in order to really understand the mystery of how our mind works, we have to get a basic understanding of its duality. And so passion and compassion is part of that mystery and duality. So we have that meeting, and the doors open here on Sunday at 10:30. On Wednesday evenings from 7:45 to 9 p.m., we are having, throughout this cycle, a study class In the Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. And we are entering, for the next few weeks, the study of the after-death state known as Devakan, the place of the gods. And for those of you who may not be aware of that term or what it means, it might be corresponding to the heaven world, or what many people think about heaven as related to their religious background. But here in Theosophy, we'll look at some of the philosophical and even psychological bases for those teachings. In addition, we have a library, which is a reference library. It is open on Wednesday evenings from 5:30 till 7:30. It's a good opportunity for independent study, to prepare for the class that evening, and there's always a volunteer student to help you find what references you're interested in. In the center of the building on the first floor, there's a book table upon which is displayed straight-line theosophical literature, books, pamphlets, and magazines. They're all available at cost. That means the cost of printing and shipping. There's no profit to be made from the sales of the books. All the activities here at the lodge, the maintenance of the building, it's all through voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. We do want to also add that we do here have a website, ultphiladelphia.org, which you'll find very instructive. And so we've pretty much covered our basic announcements this morning. So we can go into the subject for today, which is a continuation of that idea, duality of mind, but we're going to look at it from the point of view of imagination, the creator of fact and fiction. So as we said, our procedure this morning is we'll have a short talk, and following that, we'll open our meeting for your questions, answers, and comments.
Actually, it's more a short reading.
Yes, unfortunately, the individual student who was supposed to be giving this presentation this morning is ill, so we have a brave volunteer to read that presentation.
Oh, I'm brave. He's using his imagination. In our culture, if one is an artist and thus has used imagination to make something substantial, visible or audible, to bring forth what was seen or felt, admiration and applause usually follow. But for the rest of us, the non-artists, using imagination is considered only daydreaming or fancy, a worthless waste of our time. Indeed, our dictionaries define imagination as flights of fancy, especially of a whimsical or fantastical nature. And even very young children are encouraged to stop imagining, to stop pretending. But Theosophy speaks of imagination as one of the noblest faculties in man, a power of the highest importance. What is imagination then? It is the power to envision, the image-making power. It is, in reality, a spiritual faculty, part of the faculties of the mind, which are said to be thought, will, feeling, memory, and imagination. In fact, imagination is called the master power, one of the plastic powers of the soul, the memory of preceding incarnations, which, however affected by the lower mind or the personality, yet rests always on a ground of truth. Imagination is our creative power, which, when used in conjunction with our will, calls forth not only creative forces, but causes the materialization of the images we have conceived in the mind. All action is conceived in the mind and heart. An outward act is only the outward expression of a thought. Motive and thought are the real springs of action. And whether physical action follows a thought or not, they generate moral causation from which karmic consequences follow with unerring justice. Guarding our mind, guarding our imagination, and watching our heart against negative and unwholesome thoughts and feelings while encouraging those of the opposite kind are all conducive to right living. All our troubles arise from ourselves. This is quoting Mr. Judge. No matter how much they may seem to come from the outside, we are all parts of one great whole. And if you try to center your mind upon the fact and to remember that those things that seem to trouble you are really due to your own way of looking at the world and life, you will probably grow more contented in mind. It is your own mind you should watch, not the circumstances in which you are placed. End quote. Imagination taken to its highest level is much more than envisioning a picture in your mind that only you can see. Imagination can actually make a mold or matrix of that image in the ether. This magical operation is called precipitation. Now, how is this done? This question brings up the whole of philosophy offered in the Secret Doctrine. For if the presumption of the metaphysical character of the cosmos is denied, if the power of the disciplined mind is not admitted, if the actual existence of an inner and real world is negated, if the necessity and power of the image-making faculty are disallowed, then such we can't say it all of a sudden, such precipitation is an impossibility. Again, quoting Mr. Judge, an illustration will go to make clear what has been said of the imagination. One day, H.P. Blavatsky said she would show me precipitation in the very act. She looked fixedly, at a certain smooth piece of wood, and slowly on it came out letters which at last made a long sentence. It formed before my eyes, and I could see the matter condense and pack itself on the surface. All the letters were like such as she would make with her hand, just because she was making the image in her brain and, of course, followed her own peculiarities. But in the middle, one of the letters was blurred and, as it were, all split into a mass of mere color. Now here, she said, I purposely wandered in the image so that you would see the effect. As I let my attention go, the falling substance had no matrix and naturally fell on the wood anyway and without shape. End quote. Mr. Judge also gives us an example of a snake charmer. Quote, the charmer replied that he was able to see through the image, so that for him it looked like the shadow of a snake, but that if he had not done it so often, he might be frightened by it himself. The process he would not give, as he claimed it was a secret in his family. But anyone who has made the trial knows that it is possible to train the imagination so as to at will bring up before the mind the outlines of any object whatsoever, and that after a time the mind seems to construct the image as it were a tangible thing. But there is a wide difference between this and the kind of imagination which is solely connected with some desire or fancy. In the latter case, the desire and the image and the mind with all its powers are mixed together. And the result, instead of being a training of the image-making power, is to bring on a decay of that power, and only a continual flying to the image of the thing desired. End quote. Power over mind, matter, space, and time depends on several things and positions. Needed are imagination raised to its highest limit, desire combined with will that wavers not, a knowledge of the occult chemistry of nature. All must be present, or there will be no result. Adepts have communicated by precipitated letters, and they actually can be looked at in the British Museum. HPB precipitated writings in the presence of a room full of people. William Q. Judge witnessed this power to make in the ether an image. Whether it be a letter from an adept or a snake precipitated by an Indian fakir, this powerful faculty of imagination is only limited by the training of the mind and only increased by good mental development. One should have the imagination under such control as to be able to make a picture of anything at any time. And if this power has not been so trained, one will not be able to perform certain classes of occult phenomena. All who wish can study the accumulated wisdom in the secret doctrine and practice the ethics based on that wisdom, so that they may better use the powers of imagination and will that they already possess. For even in our normal lives, imagination is a potent help in every event. Imagination acts on faith, and both prepare the sketches for will to carry out. Paracelsus said, "Faith must confirm the imagination, for faith establishes the will. Determined will is the beginning of all magical operations. It is because men do not perfectly imagine and believe the results that the arts of magic are uncertain, while they might be perfectly certain." End quote. But on the fiction side of imagination, there is a serious warning to all of us in the philosophy. This is the secret. Half, if not two-thirds, of our ailings and diseases are the fruit of our imagination and fears. Destroy the latter and give another bent to the former, and nature will do the rest. End quote. And we know the imagination turned to fear and grief can cause the hair to turn white overnight and even cause sudden death. Instead, we can use imagination constructively. Thinking about even the most trifling things from the higher plane of thought, we are told, creates a plastic power of formation in our very imagination. HPB said, whatever such a person may think about, his thought will be so far more intense that by this very intensity it obtains the power of creation. We'll end with a quote from Albert Einstein. Imagination is more important than knowledge, for knowledge is limited to all we know and understand, while imagination embraces the entire world and all there ever will be to know and understand.
Well, I'm sure that idea sparked some ideas in your imagination. that you'd like to begin by sharing. Yes.
So the idea of the imagination being an image maker makes sense. My image maker seems to be so dominated by the visual side of things that, I don't know, somehow bringing in the emotional side, the other sensations, seems to be restricted.
Mm-hmm. So the word imagination refers to the image-making faculty of the mind. But since a lot of creative works, depending on the imagination, don't express themselves necessarily in images, but perhaps in sounds or literary works, this idea of the image-making of faculty of the mind needs to be expanded or generalized to the creative thought power of the mind, because thought is a spiritual power. It is the direct use of our individual mind of that same creative intelligence and force that is behind all the great operations of nature. So if by analogy we were to think of electricity as being a universal force, a cosmic force, certainly a force everywhere present in nature, by understanding it and the way it expresses itself, human beings can create ways of containing it and expressing it and using it. So in the same way, the image-making faculty of the mind, or the thought producing faculty of the mind, has the power through this universal force of spirit or spiritual will to make impressions in substance, whether they are images or sounds or vibrations. They can express themselves in many ways. So some people get a very strong feeling, and maybe they're imagination of the thing to come is a very general, hazy idea, but they have a strong feeling of what it should be, or they can see it clearly in their minds in terms of words, such as experiencing it in a dream, and then they have the whole idea and they can place it down in words, or some people through images. So all this has to do with the particular way we use our instruments, the way one particular sense is predominant in us. But behind it all is the way we use our mind to create thoughts. Unfortunately, since the mind is dual, our minds can create thoughts that deceive us, or are fanciful, or fictional, and they can also create or express thoughts that are true, eternal, realistic, and have powerful effect on ourselves and others. It's also. Yes, in the back.
Well, how does one establish what is fact and what is fictional?
About,
it's in my mind, I'm going to believe it. So
yes.
How do I have any sort of guidelines to test my own thinking?
Mm-hmm. Well, the use of the term the fact and the fictional aspect of imagination related to the idea that we can use the imagination to create fictional stories, but we can also use it to create actual things that work and have creative use. All the engineers and all the inventors use their power of imagination to create things that actually work under law, but we also know that there are many fictional stories. But even those fictional stories have an element or a background of truth in them, which has been the basis of the way it's expanded. As a matter of fact, it is stated that nothing can enter our mind in the way of our imagination. We cannot conceive of any thought or imagine any thought that does not have its basis in reality somewhere, in some degree of substance. So our imagination is just a way of expressing that which already exists. One thinker expressed it that imagination is the sight of the mind and the hand of the will. It's a faculty that way. So how then do we distinguish between those things we create that are real and those things that we create that are fictional? Well, are those things we hear around us that are real? Well, this, of course, is easy perhaps to answer, very hard to carry out, because we might say a person's wisdom is measured to the extent that they can discern the difference between that which is illusionary, temporary, partial, and that which is enduring, universal, and just, and applies in all cases. That kind of truth, that kind of reality, is called soul wisdom, and that is what we are here trying to gain, an understanding of what is true and enduring and permanent and universal down through the ages, so we can use it as a ruler, as a template, to compare everything we experience around us. But first we have to gain the knowledge, and then we can begin the check, testing, and verifying of all our experience with it. Yes?
Well, does that explain why someone in Europe, let's say, and someone in California can, as an inventor, come up with the same idea?
The contribution in question has to do with the ideas that sometimes two inventors will have the same idea at the same time. And was it not Alexander Graham Bell and some Englishman that had invented the telephone exactly the same time? But we think Bell got it to the patent office sooner. So inventors, in that sense, geniuses in invention, have a power of imagination. And remember, we said we cannot imagine anything that does not have as existence, the reality, its impression somewhere, that the imagination is just seeing it and transmitting it into through the brain. So surrounding, permeating this globe, this earth of ours, is a degree of electrical magnetic substance which science is just beginning to detect and understand, but which has been known and understood for many, many ages and given many names. In ancient times, it used to be called the ether, but in the theosophical idea, it's sometimes called the astral light, because it is electrical, magnetic, retains impressions and gives it off. And those that can sense it or see it report that it has a starry light quality, a radiant quality. But being electrical magnetic in nature, it retains the thoughts and impressions and images of everything that's ever been thought, created, said, done on by human beings, or even the images and impressions of things that were done in the past that will manifest themselves in the future. So we might think of it as a picture gallery or a window gallery or a, by now the term is hyperspace, or way we store our information in the cloud. Those who are familiar with the digital determining. But the scientific basis for this in the philosophy is that such a medium exists for everything in nature. So the inventor, through their imagination, has the peculiar ability to see into that light, to see the potentiality and bring it forth, just the way someone in a dream can vision it in the dream, in their inner senses, and then manifest it on the physical plane. But if there are two inventors living in different parts of the world and they both have this impression or see this thing at the same time, then we can have two people coming up with the same invention. But that happens very often in our own lives in a less dramatic way. We can go into that later if there's time. Yes?
We were thinking in line with that, the philosophy, I think it's Mr. Judge who said it, that if you go around imagining that everything is hopeless and gloomy and so are you, that you send that out. What you should do is just the opposite, sending out the idea there is wisdom, there is hope, and like-minded people who are searching will be attracted.
Yes.
So we can depress the world, or we can impress the world.
So the contribution is that the power of our thought, the creative or power of our thought in imagination, being impressed in substance, which is electromagnetic in nature. Even our physical substance, we understand is electrical and magnetic in nature, has a magnetic quality to it. So we can attract or repel situations by the way we think about them. And so the idea here is the adept, the one who has a perfectly trained imagination, imagining in their mind and believing in the result and using will draw from the surrounding substance in the atmosphere those elements to fill in that mold, and there will be a precipitation of the letter or writing or whatever needs to be manifested through that power of attraction. But we do the same thing. If we want to accomplish something, if we don't first have a clear idea in our mind of what it is we want to achieve, even down to the details, and believe in those results and desire to it, if we don't have that to begin with, we will not succeed. And it is by that very power that of our minds to begin to think and feel and desire in that way that we attract to us those that will be our helpers. So nobody accomplishes things, even the inventor, by themselves. It's always done in the collectivity of those who are attracted to the same ideal and purpose. But the power of our imagination inspires and attracts to us other people who have the same vision. Yes?
I was thinking about what you said before about two people coming up with the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sort of speak to consciousness? I mean, it's sort of non-local. I mean, somehow or other, there's communication, possibly.
Mm-hmm. The question has to do with a more universal or a general consciousness. So this medium we spoke of the astral light or the electromagnetic substance that permeates and behind the physical substance we know. For example, we look at this table and it seems solid to our senses, but from the perspective of a physicist, they know this is more molecular and atomic motion, electromagnetic forces. They understand it for what it really is from a physical point of view, that there's certain things behind the scenes we don't detect in the same way with our world. But it should also say, just as there is more to the physical world than we can perceive by our physical eye, there is more to awareness, to consciousness, than we are aware of in our own little personal sphere of understanding. Maybe if we are gifted in certain ways, we have insight into animals or into plants or into other people or the suffering of others or a certain field. But it should give us the idea that there is really no limit to the degree in which consciousness and awareness can be expanded. Because consciousness or awareness is really the power of spirit, which is universal, divine, everywhere, eternal, working through a particular degree of substance. Just like that electricity working through a particular light bulb manifests light, that universal awareness or consciousness working through a human mind, through a brain, manifests as our individual consciousness. But in its source, it is universal. So we are not only all connected materially, but we all are connected consciously. That what one thinks and feels does have an elevating or a lowering effect on others and other departments of natures around him or her. Yes?
Having these amazing imaginations, and for a while I used to think that more I think about it, you know, they have this capacity to create this image and have so many other humans through reading it kind of recreate the image and kind of clothe it in emotion. So maybe they're not so much prophets as they're actually found a way to create things.
Yes.
Because like a lot of their ideas come true.
Well, that collective power of imagination is really a fascinating idea. If just as an individual can imagine something and it will come into being, or the fakir, the Eastern fakir, if they have such a, through their training or their heredity, have such a strong power of imagination that they can actually create the image of a snake or a beast before a group of people, and they will see it. They will believe it's real. They will imagine they will see the person climbing up a rope, although there is no rope or beast there, and photographs have been taken to prove that, yet the people in the crowd are convinced that it's there. It's sort of like a mass hypnosis. So if that can happen, a collectivity of people who are inspired by the same image will bring forth that idea into manifestation. So we have revolutions that begin with the power of an idea that captures the imagination and inspiration of a group of people. And we have a revolution, political, scientific, philosophical, sometimes peaceful, sometimes violent, but it takes place. The same way in science fiction. The original idea in the imagination had its basis in truth, and even the embellishments had their basis in some previous impression. But once again, they capture the imagination of others who begin to think along the same way, and sooner or later, that which was fictional is now a reality. And of course, with our technological age, we can marvel about that. Many of us think back to the old cartoon of the Jetsons, remember that, and the old computers, and Dick Tracy, and the store Star Trek, and so many of those things that made those shows and movies so fascinating to our imagination are now realities. But not only that, what we have far surpasses in reality what those imaginative inventions were supposed to have done. Yes.
We think one of the most interesting ways to approach the idea is to think of the Wright brothers in that first aircraft they flew in takeoff. And we think back to how crude that particular instrument was then. Now leap forward to where we are today with the Hubble telescope. What was the seed? What was the seed, and how did they put it together, and how have we, or at least our experts today, improved on such a simple thing as a bird flying through the air?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the common use of the imagination, we get the inventor or the artist gets an idea, and it seems so real to them, they can see it in their mind, either as a general idea or in all its detail. They really believe they can do it, and they desire to do it. They want to do it. And then they take that and they practice physically on this plane. And then maybe they stumble and fall a number of times, or they make 1,000 mistakes, but they are so inspired by that idea that they keep doing it, and eventually they achieve it. Sooner or later. But when we think of the power of the mind in itself, the mind itself has the creative power. If we just hold on to an idea long enough and believe that we will achieve the result and have the right desire, the will manifest. And just through the power of the mind, we will attract to us those agents, those instruments, those people that are needed for the manifestation. So some people can come across it, the resolution, much more quickly. They don't have to go through that long trial and error period. They seem to be able to manifest things much more easily. Yes?
What was just said is the crux of the book, The Secret. Mm-hmm. And what we found, we didn't even waste our money on it. We just kind of sped read it in the bookstore because it was our opinion that the author of that book was talking about how great philosophers and spiritual teachers, this is what they do, therefore you should do it too. But what she was writing was, this is how you can use it to get yourself more money. This is how. That's not what the great philosophers and teachers said to use it for. So we have to bring that out and maybe put out a caveat.
Well, the imagination, as we said, is there's a duality to it. It's not only that it is the creator of what will eventually be fact in our life, either spiritually, mentally, or physically, but it is also the creator of fiction. But it is just providing the mold. The results of what we imagine will depend on the underlying motive. So the same invention, our artwork or book, can inspire the greatest things in humanity or inspire the greatest atrocities. So, of course, when we get to the foundation of ethics and philosophy as taught by the greatest philosophers and reformers throughout history, they always point to begin with the ideas and the morals and the reasons you do with things, and then begin to develop the mind and the faculties based on that moral compass and direction. So, of course, we can develop the imagination, every one of us, whether it's we want to be better parents or better teachers or better students or better workers. Usually we just get up in the morning and we go to work, and we're happy if we can get everything done and get there on time, and there's not too much snow or traffic to prevent that. But how about taking a few extra minutes in the morning to think about what you want to accomplish and get in your mind the image? Maybe you want to be a little more pleasant with a certain neighbor or coworker. See it in your mind. Live it out in your mind first. And, you know, it just doesn't have to be a good thing. You may be anticipating a job interview or a meeting with the boss or maybe hearing some very important news that could be critical, and you're sort of filled with anxiety. Well, live it out in the mind. What do you imagine might happening? What effect will happen to you? What will you do? What will happen? Live it out in the mind. See it in your mind first, and see the way you'd like it to turn out for the benefit of all. Just in a general idea, believe that when a cause is set up, the result will come. Desire it with the ability to benefit others. And by those three things, the will, that natural spiritual force, will bring it forth that way, in a much more productive way. So we can all practice that. And as we do, it gets better, it gets more powerful, we gain more faith in it. And like any skill, the results come much more rapidly and astoundingly once we get experience. Yes?
Two things. One, the other failure of the book, The Secret, is it fails to mention that everything you have right now, good, bad, or indifferent, was from the very application they're telling you to do.
Yes.
So you represent that, and you have to learn to use it differently. But the other thing is, when it comes to really good fiction, it can make you kinder, more compassionate. You see into others' lives and the way they think and feel, you start to understand them in a more gentle way. So we think very good fiction is important.
Yeah. The really good fiction, of course, is always based on a historical truth, a fact in nature, psychological, scientific material, and around it, the individual creates fictional characters or fictional circumstances in which to embody these elemental truths. Well, what captures us, which holds us, what values us are the truths, but the fictional story is what very often helps motivate us to get through all that. It appeals to our desire, our particular likes and dislikes. So in ancient times, they used the same idea, only they used the myth. Now in our mind, we often think of myths as fictional. But in ancient times, in the real meaning of a myth was to create, through the power of imagination, a series of emblems or symbols or allegories which represented in their images these historical truths, these scientific facts. And by doing that, they could preserve for generations the truths of those experiences, but give a way in which it could be captured and held by the mind and transmitted easily from one to another. So what's survived down through the ages as myths, we of course have in our popular literature and our popular medium as well. Yes, in the back.
This would then somewhat shed light on the story of the discovery of America. When Columbus came over, the Indians who were on the shoreline supposedly could not see the ships. And there was a wise man who was looking over, the medicine man, I guess it was, who was looking out and saw the ripples in the water. And the wise man eventually saw the ships. And he went back and told the tribe, and then they all saw the ships.
They all saw the ships. So he could, the wise man could see the ripples or the vibrations before it actually manifested on the plane. So let's take that story and think of the wise man, of the adept, who can see in that astral the ripples, the effects of things that will eventually come on the horizon of our physical manifested world. So the adept knows that in a certain cycle, a certain time, this has the foreknowledge that certain things will occur under cyclic law, and can prepare and work with that and actually influence groups and nations and individuals in such a way that when it does come forward, it will be for the best opportunity. And on the other hand, they can foresee disasters and also take certain precautions to limit the extent to which it will have a destructive effect, if that can happen. They will never interfere with karmic law, but they can work within it to mitigate some of the effects we set up. Yes?
We find it interesting, the last three or four sentences that was just said that describe what an adept can do, you could take the word adept out and put in the word entrepreneur, and the same thing applies.
Mm-hmm. Well, we all use these faculties. The parent, when trying to teach a child, works with their imagination. So whether in some traditions you tell the child the story of Santa Claus, now as an adult you may not believe in such a being. But for the child, the story has a real value because they remember it and it teaches them the truth of generosity and caring and sharing. So we use that power of imagination to transmit, to have a certain effect we want to come out in the child in the future. We want that child to grow up with certain values. And so we teach them initially through fairy tales and legends and stories, certain things that will bring out the best of them in the future. The entrepreneur does it in a different way for a different purpose, but we're all using the same power of the mind. In its highest development, though, in the case of an adept, it's used primarily for the benefit of all life, humanity, all the kingdoms of nature, because they know and feel and in fact are in their higher nature one with all. So all their faculties have been developed to the achievement of that goal. Yes?
The Bhagavad Gita is a devotional book. But in the other sense, it spikes the imagination. There's a way that we can understand it, and then all of a sudden there's something else that we didn't see that was there before. And the more that we concentrate on it or look at it and think about it, we're sometimes amazed at the true meaning.
Mm-hmm. So the Bhagavad Gita, in a sense, works with our imagination. If we were to ask somebody to explain, well, what do you think is the basic problem with human beings? What's their fundamental condition? What's their fundamental struggle? And they might have to think about that for a while because maybe they're confused about it themselves. They really don't grasp. Well, they just know there's a struggle, but they don't understand where it's coming from or why it's there or what they're going to do to get out of it. And so the Bhagavad Gita begins with the power of imagination. Now, it's based on historical facts, but the image before us is that of a battle. And it says that there's seven different keys to understanding this image, or seven different levels or ways we can apply this image, but the most immediately practical to us is understanding the human condition and our own psychology. So we have before us on the plain of Kurukshetra two factions of the family doing battle, and one represents our higher nature, and one represents our lower nature, not so much bad per se, but devoted to the material life of the senses and the accumulation of power and the status quo. And then the higher is that wants to come back and gain control of the kingdom, mastery of its nature. And so there's this tremendous struggle. And in the middle of this, surveying these two vast armies ready to fight and kill each other, is Arjuna, the human being, who, although grew up and attached to and understands and very compassionate for the lower, for the other part of his family that wants to fight him, also knows that he cannot leave or desert the higher, that it's his duty to be there. And so he calls on the help of Krishna, his higher self, his spiritual teacher. Well, that is a use of imagination to create before our minds exactly where we are, not only throughout our whole life, but in every individual moment. Because every one of us, is as a mind being, feels and knows that aspect of themselves which represents the higher, the universal, the more compassionate, the more enduring, and at the same time is very much drawn down and tied to the personal, the temporary, the physical. And they both compete in the mind as to what you will choose to do. And many of the struggles, many of the difficulties we have within ourselves and with others is because we may be committed to one thing and others very close to us, and our families or friends are committed to another. Or there might be something in our nature that is very committed to one thing and something in our nature that's very opposed to it, and we're stuck in the center and we don't know where to go. So in that very image presented to us, we understand ourselves and can carry that through life in ways that we couldn't otherwise do. In the back.
Well, we've always appreciated it. We tend to think of what is spiritual or truth or wisdom as stern and exacting. And Krishna begins teaching Arjuna, the phrase is tenderly smiling, because the wise one, the elder brother, knows what the younger brother is going through because he has been there himself. And we think using that in your imagination tips the whole thing over. You're no longer afraid of growing wiser or becoming more spiritual.
So Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita begins his first instruction to Arjuna with an image. He teaches him reincarnation, immortality, evolution in one line with the power of image. Neither I nor thou or all the princes of the earth will never hereafter cease to be. As we throw away old garments and put in new, so the real, the enduring soul puts away old bodies and takes up new ones. In one line, in one image, indelibly impresses. Just as we throw off old garments and put on new, so we throw off old bodies and take on new. The soul, the real mind, the thinker. And we will never hereafter cease to be. Shakespeare did it as well in his images of all the worlds, the stage. The men and the women are but actors upon the stage. One time we're one actor, we have one role. One time we have another role. But it's always the same actor, the same being coming back on that stage. Yes?
Well, in our modern society, we seem to have lost that independence. The advertising agency today convinces us that we ought to do this, we ought to have that, we ought to conform as everybody else does to this and that. It robs us of the opportunity to exercise our imagination about many things.
Well, it does that, but it knows it does that through the power of imagination. They know that if a certain idea is repeated over and over enough, it will impress itself in the mind, and whether it's true or not, if you say it long enough repetitively, it will be believed. It's the direct use of the creative power of thought, making an impression on the passive mind who begins to accept what's impressed there without any critical thought. It's the wrong use of the power of imagination. Creates a fiction in our mind that we believe to be true and act upon it so it becomes a fact. We don't really need something, but we have such a strong desire to get it because of that impression. Well, just think what could be done with that creative power if we used it over and over again to the impression of good ideas, eternal truths that brought out the best. And in a sense, that is why we get together in an association of students week after week, year after year, to consider these eternal truths which were placed before humanity in all ages by wise human beings so that we can consider them, reflect them, make them impressions in our mind and indelibly impress our imagination until we believe in them and make them a fact in their lives, because we may not realize it, but we are the creators through the power of our imagination and will of our little universe that we live in, but also collectively the universe that manifests around us. The universe exists for the experience of the soul, and it is the soul through its power of imagination, creativity, will, that manifests and bring forth the universe for its own purposes. So next week, we will continue this idea of the mystery of the mind, based on our duality of the mind, with the fire and light of passion and compassion. Our meeting's adjourned. Thank you.
Forward to the next
meeting. Come again, yeah. You got your little packet.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yes.
Good.